KCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us. We have a News Roundup Friday today, and we have got many, many volumes of paper here that we are seeking to keep you informed on a number of critical issues, matters that are going on. Some of the issues you'll hear today you will not get from other sources from broadcast media. Certainly, we will keep you informed on critical matters, and we trust that this serves as a reminder to occupy until the Lord comes. Be salt and to be light. Don't be fearful of what is taking place in our world today, but trust God and go about doing His business. A reminder to be praying today for the United States Supreme Court. We understand justices convene and cast their votes on some of these cases they heard earlier this week, such as the case pertaining to the trio of cases pertaining to how do we define sex from the Civil Rights Code? Do we expand it to mean sexual orientation? Do we expand it to mean gender identity? Be in prayer for these justices as that vote is taken, and the people are determined who will write the majority opinion, the minority opinion, and certainly we will not know for quite some time, likely until later next year, as to the end of their session, perhaps sometime April through June. But be praying for the justices on this and so many other critical areas. Well, the news from early this morning came as from FoxNews.com. An Iranian oil tanker cruising 60 miles off the coast of Saudi Arabia rocked by a pair of missiles today, briefly causing an oil leak and more broadly threatening to further inflame fraught regional tensions between the two heavyweight Muslim nations. Iranian state television reported that the explosions damaged two storerooms above aboard the oil tanker, which is owned by the National Iranian Oil Company, and caused an oil leak into the Red Sea, which they report was later plugged. This latest incident, if confirmed to be an act of aggression, is highly likely to be a part of the wider narrative of deteriorating relations between Saudi and the U.S. and Iran, according to an assessment provided to the AP by private maritime security firm Dryad Maritime. It's likely that the region, having been stable for the last month, will face another period of increasing maritime threats as the Iranian-Saudi geopolitical standoff continues. Coming to us from the White House, they sent an 8-page letter to Speaker Nancy Pelosi this week and to other House Democrat leaders responding to the unprecedented, unconstitutional impeachment inquiry launched against President Trump. The letter was written by White House counsel. It lays out how Democratic leaders designed a politically motivated inquiry that violates the constitutionally mandate due process protections. From the White House, they said, "You have denied the president the right to cross-examine witnesses, to call witnesses, to receive transcripts of testimony, to have access to evidence, to have counsel present, and many other basic rights guaranteed to all Americans. You have constructed your proceedings in secret. You have violated civil liberties and the separation of powers by threatening executive branch officials, claiming that you will seek to punish those who exercise fundamental constitutional rights and prerogatives. All of this violates the Constitution, the rule of law, and every past president. Never before in our history has the House of Representatives, under the control of either political party, taken the American people down the dangerous path you seem determined to pursue." That coming from the White House counsel. From Newsmax.com, Ukraine's President Zelensky said yesterday that U.S. President Donald Trump did not seek to blackmail him during a phone call in July or a meeting in September. The House of Representatives has launched an impeachment inquiry against President Trump, focused on whether he used congressionally approved aid to Ukraine as leverage to pressure Zelensky to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden, one of Trump's main Democratic rivals, as he seeks re-election in 2020. "There was no blackmail. That was not the subject of our conversation," Zelensky said about his call with the president. According to reporters, in this day-long series of televised briefings with the press that he held at a Kiev food court, Zelensky said that there were no conditions attached to him meeting President Trump, including whether he should investigate the activities of Hunter Biden. CNSNews.com says Senator Lindsey Graham has invited President Trump's personal attorney Rudy Giuliani to appear before the committee to air his concerns about Ukraine corruption. Graham made the announcement via Twitter on Tuesday. No date has been set. Giuliani said he was a lawyer defending a client when he started investigation went on in Ukraine. He didn't said he didn't go looking for dirt on the Bidens. It was handed to him as he probed the origins of the Trump-Russia investigation, stating that the 2016 collusion wasn't in Russia, it was in Ukraine. He said, Giuliani said that when I what I was told was that this collusion began in Ukraine, that there's evidence of people in the Obama administration telling the Ukrainian officials to dig up dirt on Trump going back to as early as January 2016. There are witnesses to this, Giuliani said. Well, from Breitbart on Wednesday, 2020 Democratic presidential hopeful, former President, Vice President Joe Biden at a town hall in Rochester, New York, makes that Rochester, New Hampshire called for President Donald Trump to be impeached. Donald Trump has violated his oath of office, he said, betrayed this nation, and committed impeachable acts. From the Washington Free Beacon, freshman Representative Elisa Slotkin of Michigan was greeted with jeers for publicly backing the impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump. Several constituents gathered at the American Legion Hall in Rochester, Michigan, could be heard booing as she spoke. Well, as we mentioned on Tuesday, the U.S. Supreme Court heard three major cases that could affect a wide swath of the American people. At the core of these cases is, what does the word sex mean when it comes to law? In 1964, when it first became illegal to discriminate on the basis of sex, it meant male and female. Now, at least one side in these cases is arguing that it should be referring now to gender identity, and sexual orientation should also be included, reports CBN News. One case involves Amy Stevens, who was known as Anthony Stevens, working for a funeral home, but fired for saying that he planned to start wearing dresses instead of suits required of men at the funeral home. Homosexuals and transgenders in these cases are arguing they need to be treated equally in the eyes of the law. Women who say they're going to lose some rights while these other folks are gaining them. And that poses some massive ramifications for millions of Americans across the country, said Christina Holcomb of Alliance Defending Freedom. Also, Penny Nance of Concerned Women for America told CBN News women in domestic shelters are filing suit over the fact that suddenly these women who have been so hurt and now are having to share showers and common space with men, she said, this is a serious issue. By the way, the Daily Wire is reporting of psychologists. Psychologists are now saying children should undergo irreversible gender transition surgery without parental consent. A top psychology group, they represent 24,000 psychologists in Australia, claim that children should neither have to get parental consent nor undergo mandatory counseling to undergo irreversible gender transition surgeries. This is outrageous. It's the Australian Psychological Society says the disapproval of both parents should not inhibit a child under 16 from consenting to procedures. The group argued that children suffering from gender confusion would be assessed by competent doctors, which apparently trump any parental reservations. This group of psychologists also argued that mandatory pre-surgery counseling is often an unnecessary burden on the children. Folks, we're talking children. I'm saying no, that to even give them counsel is an unnecessary burden. The APS said that the child's gender identity had likely already experienced considerable medical oversight, and parents who disapprove of their children's medical treatment pose a significant barrier for the child. This is so significant, I want to read that line again. Parents who disapprove of their children's medical treatment, we're talking about gender reassignment surgery, pose a significant barrier for the child. Additionally, the group argued that children should have access to legal counsel in order to seek authorization for their gender-related treatments. It's outrageous, folks. The parental authority taken away. I mean, my goodness, we had to sign permission slips for our children to have Tylenol at school if they needed it. And now they're saying, no, they should not even have parental consent for gender transition surgery. That's irreversible, folks. Also, let's listen to this story from WND.com. Transgender by the hundreds are now fed up with the lifestyle choice and are wanting to return to living as their birth gender, prompting the creation of an advocacy network to help them. It's called Detransition Advocacy Network, providing help to those who want to live as their birth sex. According to a Christian Institute report, 19 and 20-year-olds who have had full gender reassignment surgery who wished they hadn't, and their dysphoria hasn't been relieved, they don't feel better for it. The Tavistock and Portman National Health Service Trust offers gender identity services for children under 18, with some patients as young as 3 or 4 years old, Sky News reported. They now have a record number of referrals. They see some 3,200% more patients than they did 10 years ago, with the increase for girls by 5,337%. Walt Heyer and 8 others who have been through a detransitioning experience recently wrote in a brief to the Supreme Court that justices should leave the term sex alone. When Congress wrote the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which forbids discrimination based on sex, it was understood to mean male and female. But 3 cases before the court also bring in mind gender dysphoria and sexual identity. They related their own experiences to the court. But folks, this is outrageous. Where they have children as young as 3 and 4 years old with gender reassignment surgery. And now the growing number of people are saying, we made a mistake. We didn't feel any different after this. Our feelings and our gender dysphoria never went away. We weren't relieved of that and somehow want to transition back. But guess what, folks? Kind of too late to do that. Let's go to the WesternJournal.com. In a proclamation released last Friday, President Trump's White House announced it would suspend entry into the country for migrants who will financially burden the United States healthcare system and are seeking a visa. Healthcare providers and taxpayers bear substantial costs in paying for medical expenses incurred by people who lack health insurance or the ability to pay for their healthcare, the proclamation read. The U.S. has a long history of welcoming immigrants who come lawfully in search of brighter futures, it said. We must continue that tradition while also addressing the challenges facing our healthcare system, including protecting both it and the American taxpayer from the burdens of uncompensated care. The proclamation stated while our healthcare system grapples with the challenges caused by uncompensated care, the United States government is making the problem worse by admitting thousands of aliens who have not demonstrated any ability to pay for their healthcare costs. Notably, data shows that lawful immigrants are about 3 times more likely than U.S. citizens to lack health insurance. And that immigrants who enter the country should not further saddle our health care system and subsequently American taxpayers with higher costs. However, AOC is at it again, and she unveils this bill that would give federal benefits to illegal aliens. We're going to take a quick break here on Crosstalk on this News Roundup Friday today in order to, we'll have some information coming in the next 60 seconds. We'll come back, though, to bring up this story here and find out the latest here with AOC. Back in 1 minute, this is Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how can some lizards walk and even hang upside down on very smooth surfaces?
Chris, this is an amazing feat. Consider the gecko, which can stick to almost any surface, even a polished pane of glass. It attaches itself by tiny hairs on its feet, which are so tiny they're packed at about 500 per square inch. Each hair exerts a tiny chemical force which is attracted to the glass surface, and together they support the weight of the lizard. By curling and uncurling the toes, the lizards can break this bond and move on and take another step. You know, often engineers notice an ability in animals and attempt to mimic it in engineering design. And that's what they're trying to do in this case. Maybe by modeling the gecko lizard, we can even have Spider-Man clinging to smooth surfaces. Such things are possible if you go back to Genesis for your starting point.
Thanks for joining us for Back to Genesis.
You're listening to Crosstalk on BCY America, having a news roundup Friday today. Looking forward to being with a number of men this weekend coming to the Father-Son Retreat at Trail Ridge Camp just outside of Hillsboro, Wisconsin, and temperature dropping across the state of Wisconsin. So it's going to be a bundle-up weekend, but looking forward to good fellowship and some challenging messages as well coming from Carl Kirby from Reasons for Hope. Looking forward to joining many of you at Trail Ridge yet this evening. Let's get back to the news. Yes, AOC, this is from DailyWire.com, has found yet another way to spend your money. She has unveiled a new six-bill package of legislation called A Just Society. A Just Society provides a living wage, safe working conditions, and health care. A Just Society acknowledges the value of immigrants to our communities. A Just Society guarantees safe, comfortable, and affordable housing, says a page on her website. Well, this package has six parts to it. There is the Place to Prosper Act that would prevent year-over-year rent increases of more than 3%. There is the Uplift Workers Act, which would mandate that the Department of Labor create a worker-friendly score, considering factors like paid family leave, $15 minimum wage, union membership. That's called the Uplift Workers Act. There's the Mercy in Reentry Act, which would grant public benefits to those convicted of criminal offenses. There's the Guarantees the Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights for All Act. There's also the Recognizing Poverty Act to adjust the federal poverty line based on location. Isn't that amazing? Poverty line based on location here in the United States. There is also the Embrace Act, which would allow illegal aliens to claim the same welfare benefits as all U.S. citizens and legal immigrants. Her website says our nation must recognize that our history, immigrants, enslaved peoples, and refugees built this country. We all do better when we create a just society that embraces our most vulnerable populations and paves a path to prosperity for all. This bill would ensure that all persons in need are eligible for the largest programs of the social safety net, regardless of their immigration status. I wonder how many other countries do that. The Daily Signal report that AOC has also promoted prison abolition in a pair of tweets Monday morning. She called for a real conversation about decarceration and prison abolition in this country, adding, quote, "A cage is a cage is a cage, and humans don't belong in them," saying we have more than enough room to close many of our prisons and explore just alternatives to incarceration. And then she also wrote, "Our lawmaking process means we come to solutions together, and either way, we should work to an end where our prison system is dramatically smaller than it is today." Let's go to CNSNews.com. The United States for a month has been urging European countries to repatriate, capture ISIS fighters and their families from northeastern Syria to no avail, and the U.S. is not about to incarcerate them in Gitmo, President Trump said on Monday. He said, what are we going to do with these 60 to 70,000 people that are being held and being guarded and we can't release them, and many fighters also, he asked. I want them to go back to Germany, to France, to different European countries from whence they came. And I said to European countries, I said to all of them, take the people back. And they said, no, 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 we don't want to do it. We don't want them back, Trump said. Trump said that the U.S. has done a great service for the world and Europe in particular by leading the effort to defeat ISIS, but that, unfortunately, they take advantage of the United States. From Frank Gaffney from the Center for Security Policy, he said Turkish President Erdogan, his army has just invaded Syria, began killing Kurdish forces that fought bravely alongside ours in the recent successful campaign to destroy the Islamic State Caliphate. This incursion is just the latest proof that Turkey is a U.S. ally no more. He went on to say President Trump has threatened to respond harshly to a Turkish incursion in Syria, including by devastating the country's economy. At a minimum, we must end the pretense that Turkey is a reliable partner and deserving all of the preferred treatment accorded to the valued NATO ally that it once was. FrontPageMag.com tells us of the anti-Semitic Yom Kippur shooter arrested after live streaming himself killing two people near a German synagogue while ranting about the Holocaust, feminism, and immigration. The build identified the gunman as a neo-Nazi, Stephen Bailet, 27 years old and in custody. About 70 people were inside the synagogue in Germany, including 10 Americans, according to CBS News. The individual here, dressed in a military or police-style uniform, wore a helmet equipped with a camera and deployed several rifles. He addressed his camera during the live stream and made anti-Semitic remarks in English, referring to himself as Anon. He said, "I think the Holocaust never happened," also adding that feminism is a cause of decline in the birth rates in the West, before decrying mass immigration and concluding, quote, "The root of all these problems is the Jew," he said. This synagogue attacker killed two in Germany. CNSNews.com, Senator and presidential contender Elizabeth Warren has proposed rolling back tax cuts implemented by the Trump administration in 2018 and also imposing a, quote, ultra-millionaire tax and an excessive lobbying tax and an increased tax on gun manufacturers. She claims that these new taxes will ultimately serve the purpose of financing universal child care, student loan debt relief, and down payments on a Green New Deal and Medicare for all, saying we can make investments that create economic opportunity, address rural neglect, and a legacy of racial discrimination if we stop handing out giant tax giveaways to rich people. And folks, if you recall, virtually all of us saw tax cuts, more money back in our paychecks. But she said if we keep handing out giant tax giveaways to rich people and giant corporations and start asking the people who have gained the most from our country to pay their fair share. Well, the ultra-millionaire tax would apply a 2% tax per dollar to families with a net worth of $50 million or more. Additionally, if a household has a net worth above $1 billion, it would face a tax of 3%. Another one of her proposals would raise the tax on gun manufacturers from the current 10% to, listen to this, raise it from 10% to 30% on guns and 50% on ammunition, to bring in new federal revenue that we could use for gun violence prevention and enforcement of existing gun laws. Warren also proposes to create a corporate tax of 7% to every dollar a company reports in profits above $100 million, and an excessive lobbying tax that will tax 35% to firms that spend $500,000 on lobbying. A 60% levy would apply to firms that spend $1 million, and a 75% tax on those that spend above $5 million. Well, Elizabeth Warren, caught again, claims she was fired from a teaching job for being pregnant. She made that claim on Monday. She said, "All I know is I was 22 years old, I was 6 months pregnant, and the job I had been promised for the next year was going to someone else. The principal said they were going to hire someone else for my job," Warren told CBS. Well, Warren recounted the same story in 2007, but said that she did not have the proper credentials to continue teaching at the time. She said, "I did that for a year, and then that summer I didn't have the education courses, so I was on an emergency certificate, it was called. I went back to graduate school and took a couple of courses in education. I don't think it was going to work out for me." Documents also show that Warren resigned from her job. The Riverdale Board of Education, New Jersey, extended her a teaching contract for a second year in April of 71. The board accepted, though, her resignation with regret in June of 1971. Caught again, this time for claiming she was fired for being pregnant. Well, even with that going on, the Western Journal reports that former Vice President Joe Biden has to deal with the fact that for the first time during the 2020 Democratic race, he is not definitively ahead. Two polls released last week show Biden trailing Senator Elizabeth Warren. An Economist YouGov poll showed that former Vice President Biden down by 6 points. A Monmouth University poll showed him down by 3. The Monmouth poll put him at 28% or 25% to Warren's 28% of self-identified Democrats and Democrat-leaning voters across the country. Sanders had 15% of the time, falling quite a bit behind. Polls have shown that Warren is ahead in both Iowa and New Hampshire, the first two states that primaries and caucuses will be contested in. Biden has had a significant lead in South Carolina. Well, last night, ladies and gentlemen, last night, the Human Rights Foundation, Human Rights Campaign Foundation, and CNN had co-hosted what they called a historic town hall event called Power of Our Pride, held in Los Angeles. They said it was the largest ever audience for a Democratic presidential town hall devoted to LGBTQ issues and will mark the first time in history that a major cable news network would air a presidential event devoted to issues of importance to the LGBT community. This is such a significant matter that's going on, and to hear some of the responses from candidates, Lord willing, this coming Monday on Crosstalk, we'll be delving further into this matter, and Peter LaBarbera scheduled to join us to talk about this town hall meeting that went on. We plan to have some audio clips from this as well, and by the way, today they are boasting as being the National Coming Out Day, again, advocating for LGBTQ across this land. Well, the civil trial has been now in its second week in the San Francisco Federal Courthouse. Liberty Counsel there defending Sandra Merritt against Planned Parenthood's multi-million-dollar civil lawsuit, despite major challenges enacted by the court. Planned Parenthood filed this retaliatory 15-count civil suit against Merritt, Liberty Counsel says, seeking some $16 million as punishment for her undercover investigation, which revealed and exposed the largest abortion mill's unethical and potentially illegal profiting from human baby body parts. In the trial, it's the jury's job to assess whether the conversations recorded in the videos are private or confidential under applicable state law. However, at Planned Parenthood's request, the judge, Judge Orrick, has refused to allow the defense to show the jury the exact videotaped conversations that reveal the conversations were done in public places and how Planned Parenthood provided baby body parts for sale. So the jury's going to make this decision. Were these conversations recorded in a private area or confidential area? Well, Sandra Merritt's attorneys want to show the video. Show it to the jurors. But guess what? A judge says no. Tell me there's not bias going on in that court case? Be praying for Liberty Counsel as they continue to represent Sandra Merritt. From LifeSiteNews.com, restoring and expanding the ban on foreign aid to abortion organizations was one of President Trump's earliest and most consequential pro-life moves, but Senate Republicans are poised to approve a Democrat budget amendment that would send millions of taxpayer dollars to some of the very groups they're supposed to be cut off. Shortly after taking office, President Trump not only reinstated the Mexico City policy, which bars the U.S. $8.8 billion in foreign aid from being distributed to countries that perform abortion, but took the additional step of expanding it to groups that promote and discuss abortion. Writing Tuesday at the Daily Wire, the Conservative Partnership Institute's senior policy director, Rachel Bovard, warned that Senate Republicans have not moved to quash an amendment by Senator Jeanne Shaheen of New Hampshire that would provide almost $60 million to U.S.-based organizations like Pathfinder International, Population Council, and Gender Health and PATH, all of which list abortion as part of their core mission. Shaheen boasted in the September 30th press release that she also added funding to the United Nations Population Fund. That's from what the Trump administration withdrew in 2017 over its participation in China's forced abortion regime. But the language survived as the broader spending bill was reported out of the Republican-controlled Senate Appropriations Committee via voice vote. Folks, I'm going to come back on this story. I'm going to give you some phone numbers after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk here on VCY. America.
Having to prove the existence of God to an atheist is like having to prove the existence of the sun at noon on a clear day. Yet millions are embracing the foolishness of atheism. Now from Ray Comfort comes The Atheist Delusion. This 60-minute DVD pulls back the curtain and reveals what is going on in the mind of those who deny the obvious. It introduces you to a number of atheists who you'll follow as they go where the evidence leads, find a roadblock, and enter into a place of honesty that is rarely seen on film. You'll hear the compelling questions that cause them to doubt their atheism. you can obtain one copy of The Atheist Delusion for a donation of $5, 5 copies for a donation of $18, or 10 copies for a donation of $25 by calling 1-800-729-9829. Simply call VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
We've got a news roundup day here today on Crosstalk, and folks, to me, I'm outraged that the Senate would allow a budget to not vote out an amendment that allows $60 million to go to global abortion organizations. This is language that was put in by a senator. And this is language that is passed through the Senate committee now and would be going to the Senate for a vote. This is Jean Shaheen of New Hampshire that provided through her amendment almost $60 million to U.S.-based organizations that show abortion as part of their core mission. If it's not removed from the bill and it clears the Senate, it's likely to become law. It is not likely that the whole appropriations bill is going to be vetoed in such a case. Now, there are two individuals you may contact in regard to this. It's Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Majority Whip John Thune. Mitch McConnell's phone number is 202-224-2541. 202-224-2541. And the Majority Whip is John Thune, whose number is 202-224-2321. That's 224-2321. And certainly you can let your views be made known. If I were on the phone right now with him at this very moment, I would be saying to pull this funding that came from Senator Shaheen from the appropriations bill. I mean, we're talking about this foreign aid to abortion organizations, organizations that have abortion as their key core mission. And here we have her boasting about adding funding to the UN Population Fund. Again, this went through the it's part of the State Department Appropriations and Foreign Operations, which was reported out of the Republican-controlled Senate Appropriations Committee on a voice vote, meaning nobody knows who voted how, but we know it passed with a majority of individuals. Interesting story that came from CBS News. A new study shows that women who have had an abortion face an increased risk for mental health problems, including substance abuse, anxiety, and depression. Results indicate quite consistently that abortion is associated with moderate to highly increased risk of psychological problems subsequent to the procedure, the authors wrote in the study published in the September 1st issue of British Journal of Psychiatry. Researchers analyzed data on 877,000 women, including 164,000 who had an abortion. They found women who had an abortion experienced an 81% increased risk for mental problems. From LifeNews.com, new congressional legislation would require states to disclose the number of babies born after failed abortions. And on those who did not receive appropriate medical care and treatment, we have Senators Ernst and Cotton have sponsored the Ensuring Accurate and Complete Abortion Data Reporting Act of 2019, saying that the American people deserve to know how many babies are born alive during abortion attempts in our country. This is life or death information, yet most states don't collect it. Our bill would require states to report accurate and complete data about abortion, including instances where babies are born alive during abortion, said Senator Cotton. Troubling story is coming as well from Nancy Pelosi. LifeNews.com has a story. Nancy Pelosi slams state lawmakers' efforts to protect unborn babies as dangerous this week. Had an interview with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. She said, I think that Roe v. Wade was a woman's right to choose is greatly at risk. I don't like to be a fearmonger, but this is a very personal for people and that their lives will be so affected by a court decision. I think there's a lot to be concerned about because even if the court decides a certain way, the states are doing their own dangerous things for a woman's right to choose. It's dangerous to support life. Isn't that something? You see, in abortion, there's always a fatality, or most times. A complete abortion, a so-called successful abortion, there's always a fatality. But she's calling it dangerous to preserve life, to doing dangerous things for women's right to choose. Also from LifeNews.com, medical leaders representing more than 30,000 doctors said intentionally killing a baby in an abortion is never necessary to save a mother's life. Did you hear that? Intentionally killing a baby in an abortion is never necessary to save a mother's life. The American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the American College of Pediatricians, and the Christian Medical and Dental Association issued a correction of the recently released joint statement on abortion from the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and Society for Family Planning. Dr. Donna Harrison, Executive Director, stated that there is a difference between elective abortion, a procedure done to ensure that a baby is born dead, and the separation of the mother and the baby in order to save the life of the mother. Leadership, she said, ACOG leadership is deceptively hiding behind the confusion about the definition of abortion to imply that such treatments to save the life of the mother are the same as elective abortions. A separation procedure intends to save the lives of both the mother and her baby. In contrast, an abortion intends to deliver a dead baby every single time. That is why a baby born alive after an elective abortion is called a failed abortion. The separation of the baby from the mother did not fail. What failed to occur is that her baby failed to be killed, stated Dr. Critella. Another troubling story, and I know our time is going. Folks, we're going to take the time here. We'll not be opening phone lines today. I'd like to get these further stories out to you today as well. There is much happening, and I know some of you are just chomping at the bit to make a comment on them. But certainly take these matters to the Lord in prayer as well. Nevada has passed a law allowing competent persons to sign an advance directive instructing that all food and water be withheld if they become incapacitated by dementia. In other words, the law allows people to order their future caregivers to starve and dehydrate them to death. Nevada just passed this law. It's the End of Life Decisions Addendum, Statement of Desires. It was put in a law, Senate Bill 121, allows doctors to starve dementia patients to death. LifeSiteNews.com, for the third year in a row, President Donald Trump has recognized October's Down Syndrome Awareness Month with a statement calling for every American to be embraced regardless of the medical challenges he faces, including explicit condemnation of targeting babies with Down Syndrome via abortion. Thank you, President Trump, for standing up for life of disabled children in Down Syndrome Awareness, in your Down Syndrome Awareness message. Good news out of Michigan in my book. Planned Parenthood abortion business closing one of its Michigan facilities permanently on Friday, today, citing a lack of need for its services. WHEM Channel 5 reports that the abortion chain announced the closure of its Saginaw facility this week with a sign on the door, today is the last day of its opening and operation. Also from LifeNews.com, the Planned Parenthood abortion chain announced a whopping, listen to this, $45 million, $45 million election budget this week to defeat President Donald Trump and pro-life candidates across the nation in 2020. NPR reports that it will be the billion-dollar abortion group's largest electoral effort yet. In 2016, Planned Parenthood spent more than $30 million in a failed attempt to elect pro-abortion Democrat Hillary Clinton. Kelly Robinson, executive director of the Super PAC Planned Parenthood Votes, said that $45 million is just an initial projection, but they hope to spend even more. She told NPR that their top priority is to defeat Trump and to push the U.S. Senate into the control of pro-abortion Democrats. This would prevent pro-life lawmakers from confirming any more judges to the U.S. Supreme Court who could overturn Roe v. Wade. Robinson said, quote, "The stakes are higher than ever, and our donors and our supporters understand that very clearly." Big money, folks. $45 million, and they're saying we hope to spend even more. We have to defeat, they said, President Trump. We have to defeat the majority of senators there in the Senate, Republican senators, so that we don't have any more judges appointed that might overturn Roe v. Wade. Also coming from the Washington Free Beacon, Emily's List. This is a separate group. It's a PAC that aims to elect pro-choice female candidates, has provided its largest ever state-level contribution to Democrats in Virginia ahead of the November elections. That group announced it's going to push $1.5 million into Virginia to back female Democratic candidates running in state Senate and House elections. Again, they back those candidates that support the killing of innocent life in the womb. Well, Twitter's at it again. LifeNews.com reporting that Twitter is continuing its crusade against pro-life and conservative speech once again, censoring Students for Life of America President Kristen Hawkins' tweets, this time labeling a pro-adoption tweet as being sensitive content. Sensitive content. I was conferring with Peter LaBarbera the other day by email and indicated that he's got a suspension right now from Twitter going on as well. Oh, another heartbreaker of a story from LifeNews.com. More aborted babies' bodies found on the property of former Indiana abortionist Ulrich Klopfner. Authorities announced Wednesday. WSBT News reports that Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill said the family of the late abortionist found the additional bodies of one of Klopfner's Illinois properties and reported them to authorities. In September, authorities found 2,246 medically preserved remains of aborted babies in the former Indiana abortionist home in Illinois. But now, folks, they found more on other property of the Indiana abortionist. At that point, they did not say how many more bodies were discovered. Well, the Supreme Court announced Monday that it would not dismiss a gun rights case against New York City, rejecting the city's request. New York State Rifle and Pistol Association Incorporated versus City of New York stems from New York City's laws that allow those with premises licenses to only transport their guns to and from their homes and shooting ranges within New York City and nearly nowhere else. Plaintiffs argue that the restrictions cannot be reconciled with the Second Amendment that protects individual rights or with any meaningful level of constitutional scrutiny. They also claim that the laws violate the Commerce Clause and the right to travel. The city's begrudgingly revision to its restrictive transport ban reflects the city's unwavering view that the ability to transport a licensed handgun is a matter of government-conferred privilege rather than a constitutional right, plaintiffs wrote in a filing with the court. As a consequence, the revised regulations demand continuous and uninterrupted transport. Forbidding a stop at a gas station or coffee shop en route requires written permission before a handgun can be taken to a gunsmith, and to preclude transport to a summer rental house. Well, the Supreme Court is going to be hearing oral arguments on this case coming up on December the 2nd. We're going to take a break here on Crosstalk. Come back. Just a few more stories in our final segment today here on Crosstalk. It's a news roundup day. A full hour here today of different news and issues taking place across the nation. We'll be back in 1 minute.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. Well, it's no secret. Today, if you're a capitalist, a Christian, you're deemed to be what? A racist. You're deemed to be a bigot. This is not new. I could take you back into world history and show you how this has been a systematic program. In fact, in October of 1945, in a speech in Washington, D.C., before psychiatrists and lawmakers, a man by the name of Chisholm, G. Brock Chisholm, declared, quote, "The reinterpretation and eventual eradication of the concept of right and wrong are the belated objectives of nearly all psychotherapy. If the race is to be free from the crippling burden of good and evil, it must be psychiatrists who take the original responsibility, end quote. The goal is to say that anyone that believes in right and wrong, faith in God, America, American ideas, and the family is mentally ill. This will increase as the days become more and more evil. For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. We just talked about a case that the U.S. Supreme Court is going to be taking up coming up in December on the matter of guns. I'll have another story on that gun issues here in just a moment. But also on the Supreme Court level, there's another meeting as this meeting goes on today, this conference meeting with the Supreme Court justices. There's another case you're considering today. A Christian high school student who was urged by a teacher to recite the Islamic Creed is back in the headlines. CBN News reported in May that her case had been appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now we understand the girl's plea is on the court's online docket for a conference today. This is a situation in which a person was compelled by their teacher at a school in Maryland to recite the Islamic conversion creed, the Shahada, required to memorize the Islamic confession of faith and to recite it. Now the Thomas Law Moore Center has appealed this case to the Supreme Court and asking the High Court to decide whether any legal basis exists to allow public schools to discriminate against Christianity while at the same time promoting Islam. What's also interested, the World History course also taught that most Muslims' faith is stronger than the average Christian's faith. This student refused to complete the assignment, believing it is a sin to profess by word or in writing that there is any other God except the Christian God. School officials refused to let her opt out of the course, and so she received a lower percentage grade for that course. But using a PowerPoint presentation in the classroom, the students at the school were taught these things. Islam is a peaceful religion. Jihad is a personal struggle and devotion to Islam, especially involving spiritual discipline. Is that why we hear Allahu Akbar? Before we have mass explosions and killings and knifings and shootings taking place? To Muslims, Allah is the same God that is worshipped in Christianity and Judaism. Wrong. And also on the slides of the PowerPoint, men are the managers of the affairs of women, and righteous women are therefore obedient. Well, that case being appealed to the United States Supreme Court, they are deciding that concept today. Back to the gun issue. Coming to us from Sons of Liberty Media. On September 30th, the FBI issued a press release noting that they have published their 2018 crime statistics. Violent crimes decreased 3.3% compared to the previous year. Handguns were responsible for the majority of firearm deaths, but it's also important to point out that all firearm deaths combined made up the majority of murders. And of those involved firearms, it was a 7% drop from the previous year. That being said, the number of rifle deaths is extremely important, given that this is a weapon most often targeted by gun grabbers, the rifles. According to FBI data, 1,515 were stabbed, cut, or maimed to death by a knife or other cutting instrument. This number is five times higher than those killed by rifles, which sits at 297. What's more, twice as many people were beaten to death with hands, fists, and feet than were killed by rifles, and nearly 150 more people were bludgeoned to death with hammers and other blunt objects than killed with rifles. And yet we see those who are going for the abolishment of rifles and seeking gun control on rifles. By the way, 19 Muslim students are facing charges consisting of riot, assault, terroristic threats at St. Cloud High School fight, reports Pamela Geller. 19 students involved in September 25th fight, St. Cloud Minnesota Tech High School, facing criminal charges, according to St. Cloud Police Assistant Chief Jeff Oxton. They charged 5 17-year-olds, 8 16-year-olds, 4 15-year-olds, and 2 14-year-olds Felony charges include third-degree assault, aiding and abetting third-degree assault, second-degree riot, terroristic threats, and possessing a dangerous weapon on school property. WND.com reporting in Minnesota, Minnesota's Attorney General, the former Congressman Keith Ellison, is relaunching a case against the owners of a video company whose religious right to refuse to make videos for a same-sex wedding already has been upheld by the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. The fight is over the state's so-called non-discrimination plan, which the appeals court found violates the First Amendment. The ruling reinstated the lawsuit by Carl and Angel Larson of Telescope Media, Telescope Media Group. The Larsons preemptively sued the state over the non-discrimination requirement because their Christian beliefs conflict with same-sex marriage. Ellison released a statement charging the Larsons want to discriminate against same-sex couples, saying that he would keep honoring the First Amendment, which allows everyone to believe what they want, no matter how much we may disagree with them. The Alliance Defending Freedom Senior Counsel Jonathan Scruggs said the comparison is false. Larsons do not discriminate based on any status. They're willing to serve all people, including people of all different sexual orientations. They just cannot promote messages they disagree with and events that they disagree with as well. Well, Washington, D.C., abolishing Columbus Day. Tuesday, they approved a measure to abolish the celebration of Columbus Day, set to take place this Monday, October 4th. Instead, the holiday will be replaced by Indigenous Peoples Day. They put it on fast-track legislation by calling an emergency session. The District of Columbia was named after Christopher Columbus and bears numerous monuments and tributes to the legacy, including a large statue in front of Union Station, a famous train hub in the very heart of the city. Also, Bernie Sanders' hometown in Burlington, Vermont, passed a resolution that would allow non-citizens to vote in local elections. That happened this week as well. By the way, a lot of global warming hysteria going on. NASA experts now expecting global cooling to take place. Interesting indeed. And want to close with this story from the state of Tennessee. Tennessee's new governor has issued an official proclamation for yesterday, October 10th. It was a day of prayer, humility, and fasting. Urged the state citizens to join him and his wife in asking for God's favor and for God's blessing. The proclamation read as follows. He said, "Whereas the state of Tennessee, we the people of Tennessee are thankful to call this remarkable state home, from the towering Smoky Mountains in the east to the mighty Mississippi in the west, and every remarkable scene in between for our people who come from all over the world to find opportunity and hope in our thriving cities and beautiful communities." He said, "We seek forgiveness from our transgressions, from acts of discrimination, oppression, and injustice. And the people of Tennessee seek wisdom and discernment for our state in the days ahead. And we acknowledge our rich blessings, our deep transgressions, our complex challenges, our need to give thanks to God Almighty, to turn from our transgressions, ask God for God's forgiveness, and humble ourselves and seek God's wisdom and guidance." And so he called yesterday as a voluntary day of prayer, humility, and fasting in Tennessee, encouraging all citizens to join in this worthy observance. Amen. Thank you, Governor. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.